This morning we're reading from the Granth Raj, the King of all scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 16, entitled King Chittaketu Meets the Lord, text number 4. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kasmin Janmani Ami Mayam Pitaro Mataro Bhavan Karmabir. Brahmyamanasya Deva Tiran Nri Yonishu Jiva Uvacha Kasmin Janyami Mahayam Pitaro Mataro Bhavan Karma Karma Bir Brahmya Manasya Devatiryan Riyonishu Jiva Uvacha Kasmin Janyami Kasmin Janmanyami Mayam Pitaro Mataro Bhavan Karma bir bhamya manasya Devatiran riyonishu Jiva uvacha Kasmin janmanyami mayam Pitaro mataro bhavan Karma bir bhamya manasya Devatiran riyonishu. Jiva Uvacha, the living entity said, Kasmin, in which, Janmani, birth, Ami, all those, Mayam, to me, Pitara, fathers, Matara, mothers, Abhaivan, were, Karmabi, by the results of fruitive action. Brahmyamanasya, who am wandering. Deva Tirak, of the demigods and the lower animals. Nri, and of the human species. Yonishu, in the wombs. Translation and commentary by Srila Prabhupada. By the mystic power of Narada Muni, the living entity re-entered his dead body for a short time and spoke in reply to Narada Muni's request. He said, according to the results of my fruitive activities, I, the living being, transmigrate from one body to another, sometimes going to the species of the demigods, sometimes to the species of lower animals, sometimes amongst the vegetables, and sometimes to the human species. Therefore, in which birth were these my mother and father? No one is actually my mother and father. How can I accept these two people as my parents? Purport. Here it is made clear that the living entity enters a material body that is like a machine created by the five gross material elements of material nature: earth, water, fire, air, and sky, and the three subtle elements, mind, intelligence, and ego. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, there are two separate identities called the inferior and superior natures, which both belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to the results of a living entity's fruitive actions, he is forced to enter the material elements in different types of bodies. This time, the living entity was supposed to have been the son of Maharaj Chittaketu and Queen Kritajyoti, because according to the laws of nature, he had entered a body made by the king and queen. Actually, however, he was not their son. The living entity is the son of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because he wants to enjoy this material world, the Supreme Lord gives him a chance to enter various bodies. The living entity has no true relationship with the material body he gets from his material father and mother. He is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, but he is allowed to go through the different bodies. The body created by the so-called father and mother actually has nothing to do with its so-called creators. Therefore, the living entity flatly denied that Maharaj Chittaketu and his wife were his father and mother. Translation again. By the mystic power of Narada Muni, the living entity re-entered his dead body for a short time and spoke in reply to Narada Muni's request. He said, according to the results of my fruitive activities, I, the living being, transmigrate from one body to another, sometimes going to the species of the demigods, sometimes to the species of lower animals, sometimes amongst the vegetables, and sometimes to the human species. Therefore, in which birth were these my mother and father? No one is actually my mother and father. How can I accept these two people as my parents? Obangyan tamarandasya ginangana shalakaya chaksunimilitam jainatasmai sigurave namaha Sri Chaitanya manobishtam shtapitam jaina bhutale swayam rupakadamayam dadantishva padantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasani Go Bhaktivindam Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Vanchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhaeva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So, here we are, literally halfway through the great Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the essence of all knowledge, king of all scriptures, sixth chapter, sixth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. And again, both in the translated verses and in the illustrious purports of Srila Prabhupada, we're hearing how we're not these bodies. One could say, oh, halfway through the Bhagavatam, we're still repeating the same basic tenet of our philosophy, aham brahmasmi, I am spirit soul, not aham mameti, I am this body. And another class on I am not the body, I've been hearing this since I joined the International Society for Krishna Consciousness 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago and running. I'm not the body. Isn't it time we go a little deeper? Why doesn't the Bhagavad go deeper? Why doesn't Prabhupada go deeper? We are not these bodies. But the real point is, have we in fact realized aham brahmasmi, that I am spirit soul, that I am not the body? Actually, if one has realized this very simple truth, then he or she would not contemplate even for a moment, or lava matra, a fraction of a second, any single material desire that came to mind. One can test oneself in this regard, because material desires do come to the mind as long as we have these material bodies, as long as these bodies are in contact with the object of sense gratification, material desires may arise. Especially because we've been in this material world for a very, very long time. Brahmanda Brahmiti Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasad Pai Bhakti Lak Beej. Actually, one cannot calculate how long the living entity has been transmigrating from one universe, Brahmanda, to the next, from one species of life to the next, from one body to the next. And as a result, we've accumulated a long list of material desires. And sometimes, even in advanced stage of Krishna consciousness, because of this long contact, sometimes it is these material desires, they surface. Prabhupada gives the analogy, just like if you're sitting next to a lake, or let us say you're sitting in a boat, it's a very still day, but sometimes you may have experienced the phenomena that suddenly little bubbles come to the surface. And you're like, oh, what is that? The silt, which means the mud, the soft mud at the bottom of the lake, has somehow become agitated. Maybe a little tremor in the earth, under the earth's surface, or something is there. And as a result, little bubbles come up from the mud and surface to the top of the water. Analogies are very important for helping us understand philosophical truths. They help us focus on the point. So in the same way, sometimes in the inner recesses of the heart, for whatever reason it may be, desires surface into the mind. And if one contemplates, or one entertains, to speak, if one acts on such a desire, even for a moment, that means that we're not freed yet from the bodily concept of life. So, what to do when such desires appear in the mind? We have the choice. Entertain them if we still have some taste for material existence. If there's still some anartha nirviti, nartha means what is wanted and anartha means what is not wanted. If there's still some unwanted desires in the heart, then we will contemplate. But if there's no taste left, then when the desires come, we just say no. I remember many years ago in America, there was a campaign. I think it was during the era of Ronald Reagan. It was a campaign against drug abuse. So the American government came up with a very cute slogan. I almost said shloka, but it's not a shloka. A slogan is a material shloka. That when the drug pusher comes up to offer you the drugs, and they're appealing to the young people, just say no. Just say no. So if you have some higher taste, you know, or if you have some other interests, then when the drug pusher comes up, you can say no. But if you have an interest in that subject matter, then you won't be able to say no. So in the same way, if we have some spiritual taste from our practice of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandham, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam, the nine processes of devotional service, then when these material desires surface from the inner recesses of the heart, we'll be able to say no, which means we're making some progress in the first steps of Krishna consciousness. We have a saying in English, first things first. Of course, it's not easy to become free from these material attachments. Some of them yes, some of them no. They're caked in the heart, just like if you've washed the pots, if you're a pot washer. You know, if somebody boils the milk and burns the milk, then it's very easy to get the little bits off. But the burnt milk at the bottom of the pot, you have to really scrub. Scrub-a-dub-dub. You have to take some steel wool, some soap powder, and you have to work very hard. And even then, that milk, when it's burnt at the bottom of the pot, it's very difficult to free oneself from. So in the same way, we have some desires that go away very quickly. But due to our long association with this material energy, some of these desires, you could say, ingrained within the heart. Almost as if written in stone, although we wouldn't like to think like that. They're difficult. When they're completely gone, then one can come to the stage of bhava. Actually, Prabhupada said, devotional service, bhakti, begins at the point that one becomes freed from sex desire, which is enemy number one, the conditioned soul. It is lust only, Arjuna, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy in this world. So we must be honest where we're at in Krishna consciousness and apply the process accordingly. Material desires don't go away to the very advanced stages of Krishna consciousness. That is evident in the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj is receiving the mercy of Lord Nrisimhadev. Prahlad was such an advanced devotee, as we know, that his devotion caused the Lord to appear in this world. Generally, Krishna comes for the benefit of all living entities, but in this particular pastime, the Lord appeared to protect his devotee, Prahlad Maharaj, and then after a few moments, he went back home, back to Godhead. But after the Prahlad's father, the demon, the Asura, Hiranyakashipu, had been killed, Prahlad Maharaj came forward to appease the anger of the Lord. Even the devatas could not appease the anger of the Lord. They are not pure devotees. They're sankama bhaktas. They're devotees who have material desires. So the Lord wasn't fully pleased with their devotion, whereas he was pleased by the full surrender of Prahlad Maharaj. When Prahlad Maharaj came forward and they had their dialogue, their transcendental dialogue discussed in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's described that at one point Lord Nrisimhadev put his transcendental, it says hand, but technically paw, on the head of Prahlad Maharaj, and Bhagavatam says any last trace of material desire left the heart of Prahlad Maharaj. Here's a devotee who's so advanced that his devotion caused the Lord to appear, but for instruction's sake, it appears there was some tiny something there that was removed by the grace of the Lord, so he could come to the stage of prema. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, commenting on this part of the Bhagavatam, says that we shouldn't think of this as a gross material desire in Prahlad Maharaj, something very subtle, some last trace left within his heart. He said, just like Vishwanath gives the example of camphor, that you have a piece of camphor, it's a solid piece, if you're a pujari, you know, camphor, or you're a cook. Camphor is a chunk of camphor, but it's so potent that if you place it on the table in the kitchen and then you take it away to another room, when you come into the kitchen, you can still experience the presence of the camphor and the scent of the camphor. It's there and it's not there. The block of camphor is not in the kitchen anymore. It's somewhere else. But you say, oh, where's the camphor? Because the aroma of the camphor is still there. So there's subtle material desires. They're like the aroma of material. But they're also part of our conditioned state. What could be a subtle material desire that entraps us in this material world and causes us to identify with the body? I, me, and mine. My body, my family, my country, humankind. What is a subtle desire? Well, Mahaprabhu lays out the material desires that are an obstacle for an aspiring Vaishnava. We're actually aspiring devotees. One time, a disciple said to Śrīla Prabhupāda, you're the greatest of all Vaishnavas. And Prabhupāda blushed a little bit and lowered his head. He said, Vaishnava? He said, that is a very exalted thing. I'm just trying to become a Vaishnava. Tichikshava krunika shurinam sarvadehinam achata shatava shanta shadava shurbhushana. A Vaishnava has no material qualities, but Sadhava Sudabhushana, he's decorated with all spiritual qualities. So what is an obstacle to becoming a Vaishnava? A pukka, we say a pukka Vaishnava, a pure Vaishnava. Nadhanam na janam na sundarim kavicham va dakadisha kamai. Mama janmani janmani ishwari bhavatat bhakti ahaitage. Mahaprabhu makes it very clear. The path of devotional service is made very clear. There's no misunderstandings. There's no doubt. There's no illusion. There's no if, ands, or buts, or maybe. It's no quasi-spiritual life. Krishna consciousness is very clear because it's authorized. Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. It's very clear. Oh my Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, material objects. I have no desire to enjoy the opposite sex, let us say in an illicit way, according to one's ashram. And I have no desire for pratishtha, for name and for fame, for being known as a great devotee. You could say that as a subtle desire, because we've seen, I remember at Kumbh Mela, and I don't want to be disrespectful, but to make a point, because actually a Vaishnava is respectful to all classes of transcendentalists, because they're not ordinary people. They understand the temporary, illusory nature of this world, and they seek a higher spiritual goal. Whether they're yogis or brahmandis or devotees, they're all to be respected according to a shloka in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But to make a point, to become Pukka Vaishnava, and to rid the heart of all anarthas. I remember one Kumbh Mela that we were bathing down near the Sangam, and suddenly these big elephants came. And on top of the elephants were the big personalities being honored at the Kumbh Mela. Big, big yogis, big, big yanis, big, big whatever. And some of them were stark naked on the elephant. No desire for material objects. You know, it was obvious. They didn't have any material possessions, any frills. Not even the frills, they didn't even have the clothes. The Nagabhavas renounced. No sex. Naishtiki. Naishtiki brahmacharis, I would assume, many of them. Naishtiki brahmacharis. Never had sex. Never entertained sex. Never entered the grihastha ashram. And we can probably understand, never entertained even the thought of sex. Which is a quantum leap in spiritual life. To conquer over sex desire. Prabhupada's sex desire, he said one time, he coined the slogan, not the shloga, but the material slogan, which helps put things in focus. He said, public enemy number one. It is lust only, Arjuna, which is the all-devouring, sinful enemy. To conquer sex desire, this is something very great. Because sex desire is a perverted reflection of the original adirasa, or love for Radha and Krishna. And the reflection can never come close to the real object in a million years. You drive by a lake, it's a very still day, and the apple tree is reflected in the water, so much so that the apple in the water looks like the apple in the tree. And an ignorant animal may actually jump into the water to bite the apple, it just gets a mouthful of water. The reflection of something, although it looks very much like the original object, had nothing to do with the original object. So lust has nothing to do with prema. And actually one can't understand prema until one is freed from lust again. So there are souls, even today, who have conquered. And we offer our most humble obeisances. And I'm not saying this disrespectfully to make a point. I could see by body language. Body language says a lot. The face is an index of the mind. Prabhupada was the greatest devotee, but by his demeanor, by his composure, by his countenance, he was extremely humble. Never in his presence, you could say his greatest quality was his humility. Because naturally, one who has realized how great the Supreme Personality of Godhead is, he realizes how small he is. So a sign of advancement in the science of God realization is that one doesn't feel great, he feels very small. And that is exhibited in his demeanor. And Prabhupada was always very humble, except when he became angry. Like his Guru Maharaj would become angry when there was any statement which was against the authority of pure devotional service, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would begin preaching like a lion. He could not tolerate any statement that was contrary to pure devotional service to the Lord. Otherwise, a devotee is very humble. But I could see by the body language of the yogis and tapasvis and ganis sitting on the elephants, and they were giving commands, fan more. You know, I don't want to be disrespectful, but patishta, the desire to be worshipped, as we say in Hindi, very danger. That's not a Hindi word, but now Hindi language is incorporating so many English words, just like in English, in American English, or English English, British English. There's new words that appear every year. They're used so commonly, the authorities in the English language, they officially declare this is now an English word. Although it wasn't originally in Oxford's dictionary, it becomes an English word. If people use it over and over and over and over again, it becomes commonplace. So now it becomes an accepted English word. I don't have any examples which come to mind because I don't have a brain like Jayadwaita Swami, but I'm sure that he could give us... There's a particular word for this, a phrase for this, that words become part of the language. So now in Hindi, we have very danger. So they incorporate... This is the evolution of Indian history. Very danger. So this is very danger. This is a obstacle on the path of devotional service. So until one is freed from dhanam, janam, sundarim, the desire for material objects, desire for the sex, and the desire for fame to be known. Oh, I gave a good class. I led a good kirtan. I'm a good cook. I, me, and mine. To be honored like that. On many occasions in Prabhupada's presence, I heard him glorified, and he would say, it is all the glory of my Guru Maharaj. Whatever credit is there, and there may be credit because the devotee is empowered to do things on behalf of Guru and Guranga. But give credit where credit is due. The credit always goes back to the spiritual master, the Guru Parampara, Panchatattva, and Lord Chaitanya. So it's not easy to become free from the bodily concept of life. Old habits die hard. Therefore, we're hearing here in the sixth canto, you're not this body, you're not this body, you're not this body. From various angles of vision, just like a crystal. You shine a light into a crystal, you don't just see one light coming out. It's just a phenomenon of nature. And thankfully so, because we can use it as an analogy in our preaching to make the philosophical points clear. You put a light through a crystal, it comes out blue, green, yellow, red, violet. Wow! The New Age people love crystals. We like crystals only because they decorate the deities and we can use them as an analogy. We can take a philosophical point and analyze it from all different viewpoints to substantiate our point. And even if we said the same points over and over again, because it's Krishna conscious philosophy, it's ever fresh. It's ever fresh. So here we are in the sixth canto. If you analyze this verse, it's all about how we're not the body. And rightfully so. I remember the very first time I saw Srila Prabhupada was in 1971. He arrived at the Detroit Metropolitan Airport. And in those days, you know, you could go into the airport itself, even to the gate where the people were arriving and receive them. We had a big kirtan, and then there was a reception. And the newspaper was there, etc., etc. So Prabhupada was speaking on this point. And I remember at one point, as Prabhupada was analyzing from different angles of vision, how we're not the body. Of course, this was all new to me. It's still new to me. But at one point, Prabhupada paused. And then he leaned forward, literally like this. And he folded his hands and he appealed to his audience, which was basically his disciples. He said, please, please, said twice, please, please believe me when I say you are not this body. Now, when Prabhupada put so much urgency into the message, because life is short, and we need, you know, there are higher subjects we would like to go on to. We know what they are. We also discussed that. But I felt this in my heart. It clicked. And I knew that Prabhupada was my spiritual master. That's why we need the spiritual master. We hear these things, but who is the guru? The guru is the one that when the transcendental sound vibration emanates from his mouth, it goes straight to the heart. By Krishna's arrangement. Sometimes people say, how do I know someone's my guru? They're also qualified. I often say, well, there will be that person who comes into your life that when they say the same thing, you go, oh, now I understand. This is Guru. He can effect a change by Shabda Brahma, by transcendental sound vibration. One time I was sitting in class with Prabhupada and I fell asleep. This was in Hyderabad. And it was a very hot day, a sultry, humid day, and I fell asleep. Prabhupada was speaking under a big tree outside of what was previously our farm. And I fell asleep, and I heard from the depths of my ignorance, "Why are you sleeping while I'm speaking?" And I woke up. Papa was angry, looking at me. "Why?" I said, "Prabhupada, I don't speak Hindi." "That does not matter." "But you're speaking Hindi." "It does not matter. This is Shabda Brahma. It will act. Stay awake." I never fell asleep, either giving a class or listening to a class the rest of my life. It penetrated the heart. So this is Guru. So Prabhupada bent over, he said, "Please, please believe me." Because the spiritual master is eager for us to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. It's like a mundane father eager for us to, you know, get educated, get a job, get married and join the business and take over so he can retire. Family. Gopal and sons. So in the same way, the spiritual master is eager. Ado shvadha tata sadhu sangha tata bhajana kriya narta nirviti siyat nishta ruchi ba prem. He's eager that we make advancement. He's our ever well wisher. He's wishing this upon us. It's just that we're slow pokes. That's a old 50s. We're slow pokes. There's nothing wrong with the process. It's our lethargy, our attachments. We're holding on. So please, he said, "Please believe me when I say you're not this body." So years later, I would meet, you know, different godbrothers. I met a devotee called Pragosh Das many years later. He became a good friend of mine. But I met him in the 80s. We were sitting down and we were talking, you know, exchanging. When devotees get together, they have katha, Krishna katha, Prabhupada katha. So we, you know, "How did you join the movement?" You know, and Pragosh said, "You know, yeah, the first time I saw Prabhupada with Detroit Metropolitan Airport." "Yeah, I was there too, 1971. He said, "You know," and he said, "Maharaj," he said to me, the thing I remember the most was at Prabhupada." He said, "You'll really be interested." Prabhupada leaned over and he said to all of us, "Please believe me when I say you're not this body." And he said, "I never forgot that." He said, "When I heard that, I knew Prabhupada was my spiritual master." So I said, "I had the same experience." And then Ayodhyapati, who's now Bibi Govinda Maharaj, we met. And we were sharing our katha stories. And I said, "When did you first see Prabhupada?" He said, "At the Detroit Metropolitan." I said, "Uh-oh, here we go again." And I didn't say anything. And I said, "Was there something significant about that arrival?" He said, "Yeah, you know, Prabhupada was speaking how we're not this body." I said, "Yeah, and?" And he leaned over and said, "Please believe me." And I said, "You're not this body." Sixth canto. In fact, if you read Prabhupada's commentaries in the 10th canto, and this is his... Repetition of something is necessary to realize the fact. There's jnan and there's vijnan. So how do we get that higher taste which takes us beyond the bodily concept of life? Because you can only, Chanaka Pandit says that you can only give up something if you get something better. So how do we give up this apparent super glue of the bodily concept of life, which is slowing our progress down after so many years. How do we get free from that? Chandrika Panda says that Nityashastra means like common logic, how to live in this world in such a way that you have time to practice pure devotional service. So he said, you can only give up something if you get something better. So it's very easy for us to give up this bodily concept of life because we have not only something better, we have the best of the best. You couldn't ask for more than Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Tunde Tandavini Ratim Vita Nude Tundavali Labhadaye. I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. When the holy name of Krishna is chanted, it appears to dance within the mouth. Then we desire many, many mouths. When that name enters the holes of the ears, we desire many millions of ears. And when the holy name dances in the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the mind, and therefore the senses become inert. Material senses become inert, and the spiritual senses become active. Of course, it stands to reason that to the degree that we surrender to this chanting, which gives us the higher taste to go beyond the lower stage of devotional, to that degree we lose our attachments and progress in Krishna consciousness. And there's many examples for us to aspire to of personalities who had that lower taste, who were entangled in material life, but came to the exalted stage of devotional service. There's examples of pure devotees of the Lord, but yes, that's Nitya Siddha. They come to this world, they never had any material attachments. Their devotional service is also inspiring, but you could say what's particularly inspiring for us in one context would be someone who reached that stage from the stage of being conditioned. Follow the leader. There are two types of leader. You could say there's the leader who never fell down, and there's the leader who has fallen and came to the stage of pure devotional service. Both are inspiring for us. But a particular interest might be someone who was right where I am right now, but went through this evolution of Krishna consciousness and came to the stage of pure devotional service. That would be interesting. That would be encouraging. That means that it's possible to have an example like that. To have the Bhagavat and to have the person Bhagavat. The person who exemplifies the Srimad Bhagavatam. That would be really nice. Oh, you were where I was, you know, whatever time ago, and you got to where you are. How'd you do it? It was very easy. Harinama Harinam Harinama Eva Kevalam Kulo Nastevana Stevana Steva Gatirangatam. That person came from the stage of conditioned to being unconditioned. He had the knowledge, but he got the vigyan. How do you come to that stage of vigyan? Tadvidi paripatena paripashana shevaya. The spiritual master gives the knowledge, but if you sevaya, you serve him and serve that knowledge, and he blesses you with the vigyan. That's how it comes. We all know, we all repeat many times, we all give class, we all go to the university, we're all distributing books. Don't you know you're not this body? We all have the gyan, but who's saying it with vigyan? Because if you say it with vigyan, then you really touch the hearts of the conditioned souls. So how do you get to the stage from gyan to vigyan? Paripashana sevaya. You take the knowledge, you apply it in the service to your spiritual master. And he blesses you with the vigyan. And where's an example of such a devotee who is deeply entangled? Yamunacharya. We don't have time to go into the history, but you know, he said, Yadavari mama cheta krishna padara vinde nava nava rasa nama nadyata atum asid. Since I've been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in Him, whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought and my lips curl with the taste. I heard Prabhupada quote this the other day on a tape. He said, spite. When I spite this, his Bengali pronunciation, he didn't say spit. When I spite at the thought. Yamunacharya had formerly been a great king, but later he engaged himself in the devotional service of the Lord. And whatever previous thoughts he had, they were dispelled by that devotional service. So we conquer over these lower modes by getting the higher taste, which is available to us. Therefore, Kirtaniyad Sadahari, Mahaprabhu said, whenever you've got the chance, chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. We have to be honest, speak frankly, as the verse is speaking frankly to most of us today. I'm sure there's some saints here who are beyond all this, but we're reiterating the point because it's sixth canto. But don't be discouraged, it's a long path. Vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sadurlabaha. After many, many verse, one who is in full knowledge of me surrenders. So it's a long path, but it's okay. Confucius said, the longest journey begins with the first step. So it's better to be going slow in the right direction than being hell-bent for leather going in the wrong direction. And we can be assured that if we stick to the path, the straight and narrow path of devotional service, Ramasamhita says we make advancement in small increments, but it all piles up together after due course of time, then we'll come to the advanced stage of Krishna consciousness, especially because we have the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Conditions those who are wallowing in the mire of sense gratification, if they come in contact with the devotees of the Lord, take initiation into the chanting, then one day they can experience the higher rasas of devotional service. According to Chaitanya Chandamrita, Prabodhananda Saraswati writes, and we say in conclusion because the bell has rung, he says, I offer my obeisances to that supremely powerful personality whose wonderful characteristics are not possible to fully describe. Even the most sinful persons, devoid of even a hint of righteousness, steeped in the depths of iniquity, who shun the company of saintly souls, thus removing themselves from their merciful vision, and who never visit the holy places sanctified by the devotee's presence, such retrobates, now reformed by the chanting of the holy names, dance, sing loudly, and roll on the ground in great ecstasy, overcome by the intoxicating effects of the mellows of Krishna Prema, after having drunk the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions to chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Rantara Srimad Bhagavatam Aki, Srila Prabhupada Aki, Shishi Radha Rasa Bihari Aki, Daigo Premanandi. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. I won't take any questions today because I have a very important meeting to attend to now, but thank you again, and I'll look forward to coming back and speaking another time. Hare Krishna.